Hello, this is Dr. Rachel Giles from Medicom Medical Publishers. I'm here today to talk about five selected abstracts from the European Crohn's and Colitis Organization, ECCO, that was held February 12th through 15th in 2020 in Vienna, Austria. The first study I want to talk about was presented by Professor Severine Vermeer from University Hospital in Leuven in Belgium. And it's the VISABLE 2 trial, which is a randomized, double-blinded, placebo-controlled trial of vedolizumab in a subcutaneous formulation as a type of a maintenance therapy for adults with moderately to severely active Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. So this study took 644 patients in this cohort, and it gave them all induction therapy, which was 300 milligrams of vedolizumab at intravenous at weeks 0 and 2. And then at week 6, they saw who was the clinical responder or not. And of the 412 responders, they had to have at least a 70-point decrease in their Crohn's disease activity index. And they went on to receive either a lower dose of maintenance vedolizumab at 108 milligrams every 2 weeks, and there were 275 patients in that group, or a placebo, and there was 134 patients in that group. And they were followed up to 52 weeks. So about half of them were previously exposed to anti-TNF therapy, and the primary endpoint of this study was clinical remission at week 52, which was defined as a Crohn's disease activity index of less than 150. So about half, 48% of the patients on the treatment arm, on the vedolizumab arm, actually did achieve this clinical remission, whereas only 34% on the placebo arm did. So that was pretty significant with a p-value of 0.008. However, there wasn't a big difference in the enhanced clinical response between the two groups. It was 52% in the treatment arm versus 45% in the control arm. But the high placebo responses probably could be explained by a carryover effect from the induction therapy, which was, you know, pretty high dose. So among the patients that were on steroids at the baseline, and that was about one-third of the patients altogether in both groups, there was a marked difference in the patients in the treatment arm, in the vedolizumab arm. About 45% achieved corticosteroid-free clinical remission, whereas only 18% in the placebo arm did. So that's something to keep in mind. So in the safety, there were no really new safety signals observed, but about 3% of the patients treated with vedolizumab did report injection site reactions. And there were both serious infections, malignancy, and liver injury was only observed in a few patients, less than 5% in both arms. Overall, this was a pretty good study. They showed that among the vedolizumab intravenous induction responders, significantly more patients on maintenance vedolizumab subcutaneous formulation achieved clinical remission at week 52 versus placebo. So next, I want to talk about the abstract that won the award for the best investigator-initiated abstract, and that was presented by Mirte Jongsma from the Erasmus Medical University Center in Rotterdam, the Netherlands. And she talked about how infliximab is how it works in pediatric Crohn's disease patients and whether an approach, a top-down infliximab, would be better than a step-up approach in kids with Crohn's disease. So to this end, they took 97 patients and they randomized them one-to-one to top-down or step-up. And this is the first ever direct comparison between these two approaches. So that's pretty important for practice. Patients were ages 3 to 17, and they had new-onset, untreated Crohn's disease with a Crohn's disease activity index of greater than 40. So when we say top-down, what they did, that treatment consisted of 5 infliximab infusions of 5 milligrams per kilogram spread over the first 22 weeks, and they combined that with azathioprine. And after 5 infusions, infliximab was stopped. So the step-up treatment, on the other hand, consisted of induction therapy with exclusive enteral nutrition or oral prednisone combined with azathioprine as a maintenance treatment. In both groups, infliximab could be used, could be restarted after the end of those induction therapy. The primary endpoint was sustained clinical remission at week 52 without the need for additional therapy or surgery. Secondary endpoints were the 10-week data. And after 52 weeks, significantly more patients did meet the primary endpoint, and they were in clinical remission in the top-down group. So that was 44% of them. And in the step-up group, only 17% reached that clinical remission. So that's a p-value of 0.004, highly significant. But the data was actually already becoming pretty clear at week 10 because significantly more top-down patients, 61% of them, than step-up patients, that was versus 39% of them, were in clinical remission already at that point. And that's significant as well. So as far as endoscopic remission rates at week 10, they were also higher in the top-down group at almost 60%, and in the step-up group, only 17%. So the fecal calprotectin levels of less than 250 micrograms per gram were also more frequent in the top-down group. So pretty much everything was showing that the top-down group was superior to the step-up in approach in children with Crohn's disease. And the authors kind of advised at the end to start infliximab directly after diagnosis in the moderate to severe pediatric Crohn's disease patients. Then we had the results from the STARDUST trials, the interim results. It was presented by Professor Louis Perrin-Biroulet from Nancy in France. And this was the first treat-to-target trial in Crohn's disease patients using endoscopy at week 16 as a decision point for dose adjustment in ustekinumab. So adults with moderate to severely active Crohn's disease who had failed conventional therapy and at least one biologic were eligible for enrollment. And at baseline, the patients received intravenous weight-based ustekinumab of about 6 milligrams per kilogram. And at week 8, then they received subcutaneous ustekinumab at 90 milligrams. So after 16 weeks, the patients with a clinical disease activity index reduction of at least 70 points were randomized then 1-to-1 for treat-to-target or standard of care. So the intention to treat full set included 500 patients, but in the treat-to-target group, there were only 220 patients in the end. And after 16 weeks, 36.8% of patients, so nearly 37% of patients, had achieved endoscopic response, and 11.4% had achieved remission. So endoscopic response was independent of most factors at baseline, although it did seem to be that there was some improved responses for patients with colonic versus ileal disease, and no new safety results were reported. So safety signals were reported. So typically, I think about 37% of the patients showed endoscopic response after an additional 16 weeks after the induction therapy. Excellent data. Another study looking at infliximab really asked the question about whether it's safe to discontinue and whether that increases risk relapse in a prospective trial. So to this end, Dr. Kobayashi, he presented the data from 23 specialized centers in Japan, and they took ulcerative colitis patients treated with infliximab who had been in clinical remission for at least 6 months. And then they were prospectively enrolled to either be randomized 1-to-1 to either continuation or discontinuation of infliximab. So they had to be steroid-free, and they had to have a Mayo endoscopic subscore of 0 or 1. The primary endpoint of this study was remission rate after 48 weeks in a full analysis set, and the factors associated with remission at week 48 were evaluated by logistic regression, and that was adjusted for the treatment group. Also evaluated, of course, were efficacy and safety of retreatment with infliximab after relapse. So a total of 92 patients were included in the ITT group, but so 46 in each group. And after 48 weeks, 80%, nearly 81% who had continued infliximab were in remission, whereas only 54% of those who had discontinued infliximab were in remission. So that was highly indicative that continuation of infliximab is important for that. So the C-reactive protein and the Nancy histological index were associated with remission at week 48 as well. That was highly significant. But what was not predictive of remission were infliximab concentration or treatment duration or the use of concomitant immunomodulators. And MES of 0 at randomization was also not really indicative of relapse or not. So retreatment in patients who had discontinued infliximab was well tolerated and led to renewed remission of eight of the 12 patients, so nearly two-thirds, after 8 weeks. So the take-home message here is that discontinuation of maintenance infliximab, it does increase the risk of relapse in ulcerative colitis in the first ever prospective multi-center randomized controlled trial to evaluate the effects of discontinuating a TNF-alpha inhibitor. So retreatment was actually found to be very effective, and endoscopic normalization did not seem to guarantee successful withdrawal. Lastly, I want to talk about the SERENE UC study, which was reported by Professor Jean-Frédéric Colombel from the Mount Sinai Medical Center in New York. And he presented data from the Serene UC. In this was study, there was a it was looking at maintenance doses of adalimumab in active ulcerative colitis, and they didn't really know what dose to use. So to this end, they split 757 responders to the after the induction therapy. They split them into three groups, and so there was adalimumab at 40 milligrams every week, and there were 152 patients in that group. Then they took adalimumab at 40 milligrams every other week, and there were 145 patients in that group. And they took the third group, got exploratory adalimumab at 40 milligrams with therapeutic drug monitoring regimens as well. And that was 74 patients in that group. So the primary efficacy endpoint was clinical remission, defined as a full Mayo score of less than two, with no subscore of greater than one at week 52. About 10% of the patients that had prior infliximab use, and about 62%, 63% were receiving corticosteroids at the beginning of the at the baseline. The overall mean adalimumab exposure was 252 days, and for each of the groups, for the patient the groups that at week 52 that had received adalimumab every week, it was 39.5% reached clinical remission. In the every other week, it was 29%, and in the exploratory adalimumab plus drug monitoring regimens, that was 36.5%. So, in patients receiving adalimumab every week, the clinical remission was numerically higher among the week eight responders compared with every other week maintenance regimens. And that was a difference of 10.5%, but this difference was not quite statistically significant. However, the integrated data of the main study and a small study also performed in Japan, which only had 89 patients in it, that did demonstrate greater clinical remission rates at week 52 with 40 milligrams every week of adalimumab versus every other week, with a difference of 11.1%, and that was statistically significant. So the safety of the every week or the every other week regimens was actually highly similar, and there were no new safety models. So the take-home message was that the main insights from the Serene UC study showed that higher maintenance treatment with 40 milligrams every week was generally safe and well tolerated and had a similar safety profile as 40 milligrams every other week, and might be somewhat more effective, but that's to be followed up with greater numbers. Thank you very much.